Welcome to the recordings of the Oldies Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club, kindly sponsored by Bailey Gifford Actual Investors, who take a long-term approach to investing in exceptional companies.
And our first speaker, Ian Wilson, is a tremendous columnist at the Oldie. He's our Oldie man of letters, and he's written over 50 novels and biographies. His biographies include Tolstoy, C.S. Lewis, and Jesus. And his new book on the 175th anniversary of the Great Exhibition is The Wise and Their Works, The Legacy of the Great Exhibition of 1851. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Wilson.
Thank you very much, Harry. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I always thought I was good at football. I didn't realise I was the greatest footballer in the world. Feeling suitable for that. Being on the same lineup with former Archbishop of Canterbury is fairly intimidating. I did once consider ordination myself, and we had these, thinking of Barry Pryor and hecklers. It reminds me, we were sent out as trainee clergy to various locations in Oxford. I was sent to the Littlemore Hospital, which was the largest mental hospital in the area. And I heard myself asking the idiotic rhetorical question, why are we all here? And the heckler replied from the back, because we aren't all there. Most unsuitable for the Oldie Lunch, of course. It is wonderful to be with Rowan, who is a friend of mine, as well as being a hero. We were once together, but not appearing together, on a radio programme called Front Row. And Rowan was on, because he was discussing either his latest volume of poetry. He was the Archbishop of Canterbury at the time, but I think he was either talking about his latest volume of poetry or discussing somebody's novel. And I was then asked on to talk about some biography of, I can't remember what, but at the end of the programme, the presenter, Mark Lawson, said, while we were still on air, which I found slightly embarrassing but also funny, do you realise something? God made a mistake. Rowan should have been the man of letters and you should have been the Archbishop of Canterbury. Which is not true, and indeed the Church of England would be an even more parlous tradition had that extraordinary, grotesque appointment ever been made. I'm not here to talk about myself. I'm here to talk about 1851. In the past, I wrote first a biography of Queen Victoria and then a life of her husband, Prince Albert. What I found absolutely extraordinary about Prince Albert when I was doing my research was the extent to which he had been involved in the success of the 1851 exhibition. I'd always assumed that he'd just been a kind of figurehead, but there was this thing called the Royal Commission for the Great Exhibition of 1851, and he was the chairman. They'd come to him from a thing called the Society of Arts, saying, couldn't we be a little bit more like the French, who every year had an exhibition of their great national skills in Paris. And he said, well, we could be a bit like that, but it'd be so much better if we had an international exhibition in which every country in the world was invited to come to London and demonstrate its skills, either in engineering, in design, in modern architecture, and so forth. And his own contribution to the exhibition when it finally took place was, as you probably know, a house. It was a house designed to accommodate three working-class families, and you can see it still because it's on Kennington Common. They moved it after the exhibition. He was, among many other things, he was president for the improvement of the condition of the working classes. He was the best import this country has ever made. There's no question about it. What I was amazed by when I began doing my research on the biography about it was the Royal Commission for the Great Exhibition of 1851 still exists. walk out to the South Kensington Station. Incidentally, that part of London was never called South Kensington until Prince Albert had the brilliant idea of naming it after the royal palace where his wife had been born. It was a place called Brompton, which was a bit like, it was a kind of joke place. It was a kind of petty bourgeois. You know, people think of letters to the paper signed Disgusted, Tunbridge Wells. Brompton was a bit like that. And they couldn't have the Brompton station. So he said, call it South Kensington. And as you come out of the station, I'm going to create what we now call the other topolis. On your left, the Natural History Museum. On your right, the V&A Museum. A little bit further out, the Science Museum. Imperial College. Possibly the greatest scientific university in the world. Behind it, the Royal College of Music. Over the road, from there, the Royal College of Organists, the Royal College of Needlework. There was a Royal School of Cookery. All this came out of the profits from the 1851 exhibition. And they are still dishing out money for worthy causes. Probably best without the mic, actually. I think it's clever of whoever faded me out at that point. Or perhaps it was a hint from the editor that I ought to shut up.
No, but don't.
The extraordinary thing is, Peter Higgs, he of the Higgs particle, is one of the 14 Nobel Prize winners who started life as an 1851 scholar. And Peter Higgs always used to say to research students, come over and taste the freedom. If you're a physicist, as he was, and you want to do imaginative, innovative physics, the trouble with that is that your professor will have an idée fixe about your particular area of science, and he won't let you become a heretic. And all the great physicists of the world have been heretics who realize that some aspect of the subject had been completely wrong until that point. And Higgs, with his belief in the particle, which was a purely mathematical belief, he didn't have enough equipment to be able to see it at work, was proved right 30 years later in CERN in Switzerland. That was entirely owing, as he used to say, to the money he got from 1851. And they are still giving money for scientific research. They are still giving money to people who want to study engineering. They are still giving money to designers and innovators of all kinds. They're giving lots of money to those sort of people. They're giving smaller sums to primary schools and middle schools, for example. I can remember one morning saying to Captain Lavery, Royal Navy, who was the secretary, where are you off to this morning? He said, oh, we're off to Barking. We're going to three schools. They take these scientific graduates who can say to the children, you may think you're no good at maths. I thought I was no good at maths. You may think you're a first-generation immigrant whose parents are poor. So am I. And you can do maths, and you can one day learn physics and science. And so that this marvellous charity called Maths on Toast, which encourages children to go to school, have a proper breakfast, and while they're about it, learn mathematics. So there's a huge range of things for which we can look back to 1851 and be thankful to this day. And I was extraordinarily pleased when the Royal Commission for 1851 said, since you know all about Prince Albert, will you tell the story of the whole thing, going right up to the present day, round the dome of the Royal Albert Hall, which of course is again one of the benefactions which the Great Exhibition brought to this country. It says, the wise and their works. And the wise and their works are indeed what you find in my book, because you find wise people who have accomplished things. I don't wish to make a non-party political point, but I will nonetheless end by saying what's so exciting about the story, both of 1851 and all the things that have happened since, and all the institutions I've named, and all the most extraordinary benefits that they've brought to the human race, not just the British people, have come not from governments, but from people being brave enough and imaginative enough to say, let's just do it. And I conclude my book with the president of the 1851, who was the Duke of Edinburgh, the late Duke of Edinburgh, who was asked when he was 90 and retired, do you have a message for the 1851 committee, and do you have a message for the human race? And he harumphed with laughter and replied, yes, I do. Just get on with it. So thank you very much.
This week's podcast was kindly sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors, who take a long-term approach to investing in exceptional companies.